They were pretty good.
Good afternoon. I'm Larry Lasecki, the president of Century College, and I want to welcome all of you here today. We have the House Higher Ed Finance Committee of the House of Representatives joining us, and we're also pleased to be joined by Chancellor McCormick, Chair Loma, and Vice Chair Hoffman of the Board of Trustees, countless interested presidents and their staffs, and students and faculty and community members. So again, we're happy to have you here today. We're also happy to have our local representative, Representative Medlo, here, along with all sorts of folks from the committee. It seems to me from when I was an infant, I can remember seeing Representative Carlson at these meetings, I think. So it's been good to see him still here. We appreciate you hearing the needs of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. We want to thank you for being here. We have the same goal of serving our students and the citizens of the state better. And with that, welcome and thank you, and I'll turn it over to Chair Stang.
Thank you. I'll officially call the Committee on Higher Education Finance to order. It's nice to be here today, and I'll turn it over to your legislator from this area, Representative Medlo. Thank you for inviting us here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for making time out of your busy schedules pre-session to be here today. This is truly a jewel in the crown of the state college and university system in Minnesota. Century College has a long history going back to when it was at one time Lakewood College, and 916 actually had a separate entity as well tied in with that. We now have the campuses linked together under one umbrella. Century College is particularly well known for the good work it does in providing our future law enforcement officers and nurses throughout the state of Minnesota, as well as preparing people for other careers and further education beyond Century. Under President Lytecki, this has been a wonderful, wonderful institution, and we in White Bear Lake are proud to have it in our community. Welcome to the audience. Thank you for taking your time in coming here, and welcome, committee members. Welcome, President McCormick.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Stang and Chair Medlo and members of the committee. And thank you again for your interest in the public colleges and universities and for visiting one of our campuses. For the record, my name is Jim McCormick, and I have the privilege of serving as Chancellor of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities.
Chancellor McCormick, before you continue, since there is such a large audience today, many people here that were not at our meeting last week in Austin, why don't we take the opportunity to introduce ourselves up here so people can familiarize themselves with us and find out where we are coming from. I'm Doug Stang. I chair the committee. I represent an area in central Minnesota. I'm from the city of Cold Spring.
I'm Mike Miller. I'm committee administrator for higher ed.
I'm Doug Berg. I'm the fiscal analyst for the committee.
And members, too, if you could talk very closely to the microphone so it picks up everything you're saying.
My name is Doug Puller. I represent District 4A, which includes Bemidji, Southern Beltrami County, a bit of Cass County, and also a small part of Itasca County. My district includes Bemidji State University and Northwest Tech College.
My name is Lyndon Carlson, and I represent three communities in the northwest suburbs of the Twin Cities, Robbinsdale, Crystal, and part of Golden Valley.
I'm Danny McNamara, and I'm from Hastings, represent Hastings, parts of Cottage Grove, Appen, and Denmark and Integer Township. Glad to be here.
I'm Ron Latz from St. Louis Park, represent half of St. Louis Park and about two-thirds of Golden Valley.
Hello, I'm Carla Nelson from Rochester. I have University Center Rochester in my district, which has Minscu institutions as well as the U of M and private.
I'm Phil Raines. I'm Republican Research.
And once again, I'm Doug Medlo, here at White Bear Lake, White Bear Township, and part of North Oaks.
I'm John Dorn. I represent the city of Mankato, a small portion of North Mankato and two neighboring townships, and Minnesota State University Mankato is in my district.
And I'm Ray Cox from 25B in Northfield, and I run over west to Belle Plaine.
I'm Bud Nornes from Burgess Falls, District 10A, which is the west half of Otterfield County. It's a fairly large county, and I have the community college in Burgess Falls in my district.
I'm Kathy Novak, Health Research Department, staff to the committee.
Chris Thompson, and I'm the half of the committee.
For our members of the audience, this is our second meeting on the bonding request for Minscu. We had a meeting last Tuesday in Austin and got the overview of the site selection and the process in which the projects were recommended, and today we're going to get into more of the specifics. I understand there's going to be some students here. I see some over there. We appreciate you taking the time to attend here today, and look forward to the testimony we have today. Chancellor McCormick.
Thank you, Chair Stang. I would like to make some introductions as well. Two members of our governing board, the Board of Trustees, Jim Loma, our board chair, and Trustee Robert Hoffman, our vice chair. Would you two please stand, please? And also here today are a number of our presidents, and I'd just like to introduce them quickly, if that would be a possibility. First, from Anoka Ramsey Community College, Patrick Johns. From the Bemidji State University and Northwest Technical College, John Quistgard. If you'll just stand when you're introduced. From Central Lakes College, Joseph Birmingham. Century College, Larry Latecki. Dakota County Technical College, Ronald Thomas. Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College, Don Day. Enver Hills Community College, Cheryl Frank. Lake Superior College, Kathleen Nelson. Minneapolis Community and Technical College, Phil Davis. Minnesota State College Southeast Technical, Jim Johnson. Minnesota State Community and Technical College, Ken Peters. And by the way, Ken is serving as President of the Presidents and joins me in the Leadership Council. He's in a special role this year. Minnesota State University Mankato, Richard Davenport. Minnesota State University Moorhead, Roland Barton. Normandale Community College, Thomas Horick. Northland Community and Technical College, Orly Gunderson. Pine Technical College, Robert Musgrove. Rochester Community and Technical College, Don Sapala. St. Cloud State University, Roy Saigo. St. Paul College, Donovan Swichtenberg. South Central Technical College, Keith Stouffer. And Winona State University, Daryl Kruger. And from my office, two senior officers, Laura King, the Vice Chancellor for Finance, and Linda Baer, the Senior Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. Now, several presidents who could not be here today have staff here, and if there are questions, we'll be prepared to respond to them. I'm also pleased to welcome the class of Rick Nelson, a political science faculty member here at Century College, and all of our system is all about students, and we're really glad that you are here. I talked with the committee last week at Riverland Community College in Austin about the size and the scope of the system. I'm not going to repeat that information except to remind you that we serve 370,000 students each year in credit and non-credit courses. Our enrollment is at an all-time high after five consecutive years of significant growth, and we serve 67% of Minnesota's undergraduates, far more than the University of Minnesota at 15%, the private colleges at 14.6%, and the private career schools at 3.1%. Last week, we talked about our number one priority, repair and replacement, and several system-wide initiatives. Today, we'll be talking with you about the capital projects at the colleges and universities. Now, even among the capital projects, three-fourths of our request is for renovation of existing spaces, with the rest for new construction. When you look at our priority list, you will see that we place an emphasis on health care and science projects that will help the colleges and universities expand the capacity to educate health care professionals and make improvement and of course make the improvements in laboratories and science facilities. At a time when the state is facing a severe shortage of nurses, these programs have become increasingly important. Our colleges and universities educate 78% of the state's new nursing graduates each year, and we offer a variety of career programs in other healthcare-related fields as well. Now, these programs are located throughout the state, as you can see from the careers in healthcare brochure, which we have and has been distributed. Now, before I turn the presentation over to Associate Vice Chancellor Alan Johnson to give you the details of the projects, I would like to spend a moment to talk about Governor Pawlenty's bonding recommendations, which were released last week, and how they compare with our request. Governor Pawlenty recommended $88.6 million for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, which amounts to 32% of our request of $274.9 million. And we have the handout as well as the slide. Now, we believe that the governor's proposal is a really good start, and he recognized the system's priorities as outlined by the board. However, we had hoped that he could have gone further on the recommendations, and you can see the difference is about $186 million. Now, we expect or understand that the governor has had a difficult time deciding among $1.6 billion in requests for across the state. However, we believe the needs of our students and the people of Minnesota need additional consideration. And we look forward to working with the legislature and the governor as the bill is developed and progresses through the various discussions which will occur. And now I'd like to turn this over to Alan Johnson for the detail, but I'm going to be right here. Our board members are here, and we're here for questions, and our presidents, if there's an individual project, we'll get them up here so that they can answer. So we'll be here for interrogation or other questions. But if it's agreeable, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Alan Johnson at this time.
Johnson.
Thank you, Chancellor. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity to come back and see the committee a second time. By way of handouts for this afternoon, and I'll be referencing these from time to time, you should have a packet of these slides in your packet. I will be referencing also our bonding book, Maintaining the Edge. As we go project to project, the booklet contains details about each project. And then we've also passed out, as I promised last week, our $100 million project list for HEPA projects. And that's a spreadsheet that looks something like this. This was forwarded to you under cover letter dated January 15th. Is required by statute, and this is the one that provides the priorities at each individual campus location. I'll come back to that in a minute. There were some follow-ups from last week that I'd like to touch on briefly. There was a question about highlighting our collaborative efforts in putting this capital budget together, and to start that discussion, each one of the slides that contains some information about particular projects will give me the opportunity to mention some of those collaborative efforts. Academic outcomes was a very broad question in the context of saying how many more students will this capital budget produce in the allied health professions, such as healthcare and nurses and the like. And we believe at this point that the budget as it's put together would result in an increase of approximately 500 students in those professions. We need to do some additional research on that topic, as well as the question regarding having sufficient faculty, and we will get back to you with a more detailed response to that particular question. There was a question about demolition and what the cost savings would be. I'll address that shortly. The question about $100 million specific HEPA projects you have in your handout in front of you, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And also, in connection with HEPA, of course, we have the governor's recommendation of $49 million that you've seen before, and I'll address that in a moment as well. There was also a question about debt service, and I would like to spend a few slides to review some of the information from last week, as well as provide some additional information as to how debt service impacts tuition. Recall that higher education, both the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, as well as the University of Minnesota, pays one-third debt service on capital projects except HEPA. In our current program request, that translates to $215 million of general obligation bonding, $57.9 million of user financing or debt service, and then $1.6 million we had requested from the general fund for our demolition initiative. That debt service is spread one-sixth system-wide, and one-sixth of the debt service each year for a project then goes to the gaining college or university that benefits from the project. In terms of impact, it works out to be 9.6 cents per full-time student per $1 million per year. Roll that up at the system office level for the one-sixth that the system office is responsible for paying for system-wide, that's about $2.2 million per year. Now, the campus impact will vary. It depends on the enrollment of the particular campus. It depends on the existing debt, as well as the tuition ratio, how much of their operating budget is actually covered by tuition. That varies from institution to institution. So, for example, on a $10 million project, using St. Cloud State as an example, a $10 million project would result in $4.21 of new debt per student out of tuition per year. Add to their existing debt, it would come to their annual debt load then would be $21.19. Now, if you go to St. Paul College, a smaller college with less enrollment, you can see the impact there. It's $15.31 per student per year of new debt for a $10 million project, or $34.73 if you add their existing debt.
Ms. Johnson, on the debt service, the way you have it budgeted currently, with a total recommendation of 274, with 1/6 of the debt service system-wide, or the system is responsible, where is that money? Is that money currently in a pool or in some account where you take from that? And if you don't get the full 270, what happens to those dollars that you've budgeted for that debt service initially, for your debt service?
Mr. Chairman, the amount that's budgeted each year is based on a rolling amount. The actual impact is fairly negligible at the system office level, and so if that expense doesn't materialize, then there's an opportunity to divert that particular expense to something else if the debt service is not there. Currently, I think the debt service at the system office level is around $10 million per year at the moment. I'd like to go back to HEPR for the moment. I recall that's the priority one in the request. The basis for the HEPR program comes from Minnesota Statute Chapter 135A. And as I mentioned last week, since merger, a major focus of our capital budget requests have been in this program at $100 million per year in the last three bienniums. And it's through this the Higher Education Asset Preservation and Replacement Program that we're able to replace roofs, boilers, chillers, and other infrastructure components of our campuses, comply with building codes, air quality and ADA requirements, and in general keep the campuses safe, warm, and dry. You recall from last week's presentation that we received almost $200 million in HEPA requests, and after a detailed review and consideration of campus priorities, we developed the list that you have in front of you for $100 million that was presented to the campus presidents and to the Board of Trustees. Something I didn't mention last week was that this HEPA program will also produce cost savings due to improved roofing systems, replacement of insulation, moisture protection, and so on, and more efficient mechanical systems. Just in those areas alone, we estimate that at least $1.1 million of annual savings to accrue just with those major replacements.
Representative Carlson.
Maybe you're going to get to this, but while we're on the HEPR and I'm looking at the printout, there's a column where it has institutional priority and then rankings 1, 2, 3, 4.
I think maybe down as far as 5. And if you could maybe at some point, if not now, explain what those rankings mean, and if they mean what I'm guessing they mean, would we, with $49 million, be taking care of the number ones, the number twos, or you know what combination, or just how you would approach the issue with the request being about half of what you felt was needed?
Mr. Johnson.
Chairman, Representative Carlson, the priorities that you see are the priorities that the presidents place on these projects when they send them in, and we try to respect those, of course, with the notion that the presidents know best what's on their campus and the condition of things. With a reduced amount of allocation, we'll see in a moment here what that impact is, and perhaps when we get to that slide, then I'll mention that a little bit further.
That'll be fine.
All right, Mr. Johnson.
This is how the allocation started at $196 million. I believe this was also a question from last week, and the campus requests, and how the allocation was pared down, if you will, to yield $100 million. Some of the campus requests don't directly correlate to the allocation because, for example, in the life safety and fire line, there may have been other improvements and renovations included in that, and so it's not a dramatic drop from $17 million to $8 million. Much of the items within that $17 million, for example, wound their way into several of the other categories if they were even able to compete at the $100 million level. Now, looking at what the governor has recommended, and you can see how the allocations drop. For example, in the $49 million allocation, and this is a pretty rough cut at this point in time. I have to say that there had to be a little bit more in-depth analysis of some of these projects. But at first blush, it would look like that 11 campuses would not receive any HEPR allocation at all under this $49 million program. The roof projects would be reduced from 41 to 27, and of those that would have been reduced, five roofs in that reduced amount are already leaking. Others in that reduced category have exceeded their expected life. They have wet insulation, ponding, membrane shrinkage, deteriorated flashing, and the like. Many are single-ply roofs, which usually only last 12 to 14 years to begin with. And while there are repairs being made, these things can't be sustained continually. Fire safety projects would be reduced from 8.3 to 4.1. And while I would assure you that basic protection has been assured around the system for fire detection and fire monitoring and alarms, we still are left with many fire systems, fire protection systems, that are 35 years old. And while they operate and they will do the job, they have met their expected life and are costly to keep in service and are just something that needs to be upgraded for current technology. Major infrastructure projects, those are the ones with the major mechanical systems, and the projects would replace the aging systems that have also reached 30 and 35 years of age. They would drop from $36 million to $18 million. And what it means is it's simply a deferring of those projects. They don't go away, unfortunately, and indeed they only make them more expensive in the future when the time comes to get around to repairing them. And they add to the growing backlog of required work. Once again, this is a preliminary look, and we'll have to do a little bit more research on that as we see the session unfold and as we see the support that we may be hearing about HEPR around the legislature. I do want to say, just leave a few things on HEPR to tell you that we're keeping our promise to you. This is the 2000 program of spending, the blue line. The smooth blue line with the blue squares indicates planned execution, and for the 2000 program, which was I think $30 million if I remember correctly, the commitment was to encumber all those funds in 30 months, and you can see that indeed did take place. 30 months they were all encumbered, and that practically spent in 36 months. That's of March of 2003. As of December of 2003, the 2000 program has $26,000 left in balance from the $30 million appropriation. The 2002 program, which was a $60 million appropriation, and you can see here once again the planned line. We improved on our promise, and we said we would encumber those funds in 24 months and spend them in 36. And you can see our encumbrance line, the commitment in spending, was doing quite well up through December. We're taking a close look at that now and make sure that we get that back up on track. And you can see the spending line, the actual money out the door, is tracking nicely as well. And as of December of 2003, We actually have 53 million of that 60 million encumbered and spent on contracts, and 42 million actually spent. Now it's the time here that I'd like to turn to individual projects and to review the board's overall priority list. We already talked about HEPR as priority number one. Priorities 2 through 9, and referring you back to the bonding, to our booklet, which has the priorities in it. Priorities 2 through 9 are projects that were partially funded in either 2000, 2002, or 2003, and our 04 request then will complete their phased construction. Priorities 10 through 15 of the initiatives we discussed last week. I do want to mention one word about one of those in a moment. Priorities 16 through 20 are those projects that were funded in 2003 and were funded for design. And so design work is underway. It will be completed this year and ready for bid this year for those particular projects. And so priorities 21 to 32 then are new projects. These are those that have not been brought to the legislature previously. What I'll do now is click through each of those projects, spend a few moments on each one to give you a very brief overview, and then see if there are any questions on a particular project as we go through the priority list. Priority number two is at Winona State University. It's the renovation of Pasture Hall. It's actually the second phase of Winona State University's strategy for the sciences. Phase one was the new science building. You can see it right here. The new science building was funded in 2002. The construction is well underway and is scheduled for a spring completion in 2004. The project now is to renovate Pasture Hall behind the new building. It supports science, engineering, nursing, allied health, and so on. In that renovation, it will remove $6.5 million worth of deferred maintenance. There are many university partnerships that this project represents. In particular, the university has partnerships with industry and government that led to the creation of 8 science and engineering centers, things such as Composite Materials and Testing Center, Water Resources Center, and science centers such as those. The centers provide research, analytical, and testing services to the community and other educators, including the K-12 partners in Winona. On the business side, IBM and Mayo and many smaller industries have donated equipment to Winona State science and engineering programs. Students who are majoring in science and engineering have completed internships and directed studies with regional industries and units of government. Winona State also offers shared programs with Southeast Technical College and Rochester Community and Technical College. So that's an indication of this is one project and the collaborative efforts that might be represented within that within the bounds of that project. Next priority is at Minnesota State University Moorhead. It is their phase two of their science program, science strategy for facilities. The new science building is also under construction. It was funded in 2002, and it too is scheduled for completion this year. The Hagen Hall remodeling adjacent to the new building will support science teacher preparation and also removes over $8 million in deferred maintenance. All the labs in the new building, both the renovated and the new construction, will have 24 stations. That means the lab space will be increased by 50% since current labs are only holding about 16 students. And that will enable more hands-on science in the liberal studies, teacher preparation programs, including elementary education. In this particular project, it has been estimated that over 40 additional Bachelor of Science degrees in nursing will result specifically with the completion of this science project. Priority number four is right here at Century College. It's the remodeling of 21,000 square feet of what is known as the transition wing. This wing was purchased from Intermediate School District 916 funded by the legislature in 2002. The legislature also funded the design for the renovation that we are requesting this year. The renovation will create open computer labs and technology-enhanced classrooms, and will also renovate some spaces in the main campus, which had previously been occupied by the school district administrative offices. Century College has the largest growth of any two-year school in the system, over 54% growth since 1999, which has led to one of the larger space deficits in the system. The college's new health careers institution is a partnership with several Twin Cities hospitals, and another partnership that's reflected here is also between Conseco and Minnesota Job Skills Program that develop computer security skills. Priority number five is at St. Cloud State. That's the completion of Centennial Hall renovation at $2.9 million. Here again, the phase one design and construction was funded in 2003. This project, a very cost-effective renovation of the old library, will allow enhanced collaboration by the nationally accredited Herberger College of Business. And by locating the business and the English department together, expansion of programs for writing and communications will occur. Employers in the central region of Minnesota have indicated that they value writing and communication skills very highly from St. Cloud graduates. Centennial Hall is also the site of the Regional Computer Center that provides computer network support and web services to all the campuses in the central region of the state. Lake Superior College in Duluth, priority number six. This is the construction of a 46,000 square foot building addition for student services and classrooms, and remodeling of about 8,800 square feet for student life activities. This design was also funded in 2003. And it addresses the significant growth at Lake Superior over the past 5 years. There are existing collaborations at Lake Superior that will be strengthened with this project. It will house things like a job training partnership office, the Regional Northeast Alliance for Telecommunications, the Duluth office, and technical support space, learning space for the region's homeschool academic programs, and workforce training centers for area businesses and industry. Priority number seven is at St. Cloud Technical College. It's the construction of a 40,000 square foot addition for academic classrooms and student services, and then the remodeling of 40,000 square feet in the G Wing for a workforce center, which will share programs with the college. It will create a one-stop center for workforce activities at St. Cloud. This design was also funded in 2003, addressing 46% enrollment growth in the last 5 years. The largest collaboration here, of course, is with the Stearns-Benton Workforce Center. The Technical College and the Workforce Center will be sharing testing services, career placement, and career resource information. There's the ability here to provide a one-stop type of atmosphere where dislocated workers can engage with the Workforce Center on the site and then literally walk down the hallway to admissions and registration to enroll them in programs. We have Kathy Zavala here with us, who is the Executive Director of Stearns-Benton Employment and Training Center, should there be any workforce-related questions regarding this project.
Representative Lyons.
Sorry, you can go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, sir, the governor appears to have only funded $1 million out of that $13.9 million request for St. Cloud Technical College. How would you anticipate spending that $1 million?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lotz, it's my understanding that the $1 million would go for science classrooms, renovation of science classrooms within the main building that currently exists.
Mr. Chairman, sir, was that a priority that was determined by the governor in his allocation decision, or was that left up to you?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Latz. The part of that recognized that there was an initiative in the initiative projects for science labs at St. Cloud Tech, and so that part was already recognized as a requirement that we had determined. Within this project, there is also the renovation of some science labs. And so that was recognized in the governor's recommendation by taking that piece out and recommending it as a $1 million combination of the two. Thank you.
Representative Carlson?
Chairman, I was interested in finding out what the status of these work centers are currently. Are they in lease space, or just what is the situation? And if they are in lease space, would that not free up some funds if we're paying rent?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, it's my understanding that the Workforce Center is in a lease space off campus, and that would free up funds for, in turn, leasing space in the college campus. And that lease is drawing to a close, and in collaboration with the Workforce Center, the project emerged as a co-location project.
So, Mr. Chairman, the arrangement is then that they would lease the space from the college.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, that is correct.
How does that play in the debt service issue that we talked about earlier then?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the lease amount that the Workforce Center would pay, as any tenant would pay, would be such to offset the debt service for the remodeling portion that they would be occupying, the cost of the remodeling, as well as the operating costs, the heat bill and the light bill and custodial services.
Okay. Thank you.
Priority number 8, South Central Technical College, both at Faribault and North Mankato. This would remodel 83,000 square feet of applied teaching labs at North Mankato and do some basic asset preservation work that would cover 60,000 square feet at Faribault. Once again, the design was funded for this project in the 203 bonding bill. The project will improve space for targeted industry partnerships, particularly printing and graphics, and improve space for electronics and wireless communications. The areas to be renovated in this project are key to the regional community economic health, things like manufacturing technology, agriculture and the agribusiness service technology programs, printing and graphic technology, and electronics and wireless communications. So it responds directly to workforce needs in the Mankato area. Inver Hills Community College, priority number 9 at $5.6 million. This is to construct a 19,000 square foot addition for student services and to remodel some 16,000 square feet of student service space that exists. Once again, the design was funded in 03. It will integrate services for customized training students as well as for credit students. Inver Hills, as far as collaborative activities, Inver Hills became, starting about 6 years ago, a top-tier partner with Cisco Systems, and in 1997 was one of five regional Cisco certified network academies in Minnesota. Later in 2001, then, the college became one of only five sites in the United States to offer a higher-level Cisco-certified network professional certifications. Cisco Corporation has supported the college and these programs with state-of-the-art equipment throughout these years. These programs bring employees to campuses from some of the largest employers in the state, such as Wells Fargo, Goodrich Aerospace, Thomson, West Legal, Northwest Airlines, Cargill, Ecolab, Fortis, and 3M. This has dramatically increased the number of non-credit students to over 2,000 at Inver Hills, many who come to the campus to be processed and to use the specialized equipment. The construction activity here will provide space to efficiently process and work with these students as they pursue their careers. Now, while not a workforce center per se, Inver Hills also partners with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, who will share space in this project. Deed also provides a job bank computer that allows students to link to the Minnesota Job Skills Job Bank. Last week, I talked about the system-wide initiatives, the Science Lab initiative, renovations at 17 campuses for $8.9 million, workforce classroom renovations, technology classroom renovations, demolition, consolidation renovations at 7 campuses, and land acquisition.
Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Johnson, I was just curious, since I was absent last week, and I apologize for that, Mr. Chair, wasn't able to make it to Austin, but how would an institution, or how did institutions get on the system-wide list? In other words, are they coming out of requests that were in HEPR, or are they coming out of projects that may have been a little bit lower on the list and fairly small that you've grouped together? How has these lists been compiled?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fuller, these project initiatives were developed early in the criteria in the board's planning time frame, and so colleges and universities, in putting their projects together, could choose how to submit for a project such as this. They could choose to have a major project as well as an initiative project, or in most cases, many of the schools chose to do an initiative project, not wishing or not needing to have a larger project. So they all came through the door, if you will, at the same time.
Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So these were projects that weren't necessarily previously on the MNSCU list, but an institution could have decided that to put it in with this grouping as a smaller project and get it funded that way. Is that correct?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fuller, that is correct. It allows institutions who did not want or need a large project to get a small amount of remodeling done in the $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 range per project. That adds up, as you see, to the number of campuses for a total project cost.
One more thought, Mr. Chair. So we're not necessarily grouping a lot of projects who are already on the list. We haven't shrunken the list, so to speak, by moving these all forward.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fuller, that is correct.
Mr. Johnson, on the actually referring back to Representative Latz's question, just so I'm clear, the technical college money for St. Cloud Technical College, the $1 million, that is specific, what you mentioned was for the lab, so that is different than the 1.285 that's in the system-wide science laboratory renovations included in that $8.9 million. I'm on page 14 of the book. I see St. Cloud Tech, and I was just curious if that $1 million is referring to that project or if it is actually a part of the number 7 on your list. Or,
yeah. Mr. Chairman, the project that you see on that page 14, priority 10, that's for 1,285 square feet.
So oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
That's the square footage size. The value of that project, actually, I don't have it in front of me, but it's about $500,000
okay.
just for that project. And
so
then in the major project, there's other renovation work for other labs. And what I believe the governor did then was take the labs from the major project and the labs in the initiative, put them together for a $1 million recommendation.
So there is some crossover then in this project in that $1 million that the governor is...
Mr. Chairman, in this case, there is, okay. There is that crossover.
Thank you.
Let me mention briefly the demolition initiative because there were some questions on that last week. It would this would demolish 97,000 square feet of obsolete space at 10 campuses. Of course, it would remove deferred maintenance rather quickly. It would eliminate a little over $100,000 a year in annual operating costs, or $2.16 million over 20 years. The governor recommended this project. He recommended it as GO funding with the traditional one-third debt service. With that recommendation, the savings would still be substantial at $1.33 million over 20 years if debt service was required on this project. Turning now to projects, priorities 16 through 20, these were funded in design in 2003, anticipating construction in 2004. And this work, these projects will be also ready for bid this year. Dakota County, essentially a remodeling project of some 45,000 square feet to improve the library and academic support functions, particularly focuses on telecommunications spaces and a degree programs in telecommunications. Dakota County Technical College has had a long history of strong business and industry relationships that would be strengthened with this IT and telecommunication renovation projects. Regional business and industry have already contributed $200,000 in external funding, anticipating that this project would come forward. Also, Frontier Communication of Minnesota has recently donated a Nortel network switching system valued at over $1 million, and that switching system would be incorporated into the learning laboratories to be renovated, to be created actually under this project. Number 17 at Fergus Falls, Minnesota State Community and Technical College. This would construct a 28,000 square foot addition for fine arts, technology, and student services, remodel 5,700 square feet of classrooms and interactive TV classrooms. This also was one where design was funded in 03. It will consolidate departments, create correctly sized classrooms, and enhance the distance education that Fergus Falls currently offers. Once again, there have been collaborative efforts with local business partnerships. This particular example shows where 20 faculty members representing all the disciplines at the college were able to obtain advanced training on web-supported materials and web-enhanced curriculum and courses in English, business, fine arts, psychology, science, and nursing. And this was all funded through particular partnerships. Priority number 18 at Minnesota State Community and Technical College, the Moorhead campus, is to construct a 19,000 square foot addition for allied health and construction trades, remodel 11,000 square feet of student services and physical plant. This too was funded in 03 for design. We'll also demolish a small building in concert with this project. It will address significant enrollment growth as well as deficit of space at the Moorhead campus. The Moorhead campus, the Technical College campus, has grown 38% over the last 7 years. This remodeling and addition will help to continue serving the growing allied health disciplines and construction trades in the Fargo-Moorhead region. Both the allied health and construction trades have strong employment histories with increased wage growth in the Northwest area. Priority number 19 is at Bemidji State University and Northwest Technical College, Bemidji. This is a very unique new institution formed by the alignment of Bemidji State University and Northwest Technical College, Bemidji, aligned under one president. The project does two things, remodels 33,000 square feet at Bridgman Hall on the university campus and constructs 11,000 square feet addition at the Northwest Technical College campus. The Bridgman Hall remodeling supports the industrial technology degree programs, while the space addition at the Technical College will support growing nursing and allied healthcare workforce training and career laddering. This, too, design was funded in 2003. Bridgman Hall, which was constructed in 1964, currently houses 10 programs and more than 500 declared majors, experiencing an 88% enrollment increase since 1998. Continued enrollment growth in the programs at both the university and the technical college would anticipate an additional 500 students within 4 years of completion of this project.
Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Johnson, you know, we all get a little disappointed sometime when our projects fall a little lower than where we thought they should be. But I'm wondering if you can answer for me why this project ended up being number 19 on the list instead of falling into number 30 of your slide presentation or the PowerPoint, where phase construction projects fell in either in the priorities number 2 through 9. Why did this phase project end up lower in the list?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fuller, the phasing of this project to where it eventually wound up, I think, was a combination of some struggling between the university, the tech college, and ourselves as to what exactly the scope of the project was all about, as well as the delayed construction of the addition to Bridgman Hall, which is just broke ground here before the holidays. So while it did not get as advanced up the list as perhaps some others that have been funded for design, we recognized that it had strong academic support, and consequently it needed to be on the list. It was felt this was an appropriate place for it to wind up.
Representative Fuller.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, is the theory then that by moving it down the list, obviously the priority of that MNSQ goes down and the chances of being funded go down a little bit, that there was some concern that because we just broke ground with the $5 million that was funded in 2002, we may not have the chance to spend those dollars as quickly as maybe as some other projects? Is that what I'm hearing? We wouldn't be able to get into the ground and spend the money?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fuller, that is a consideration when we put the list together. However, we fully would be hopeful that the design would be ready and this would be ready to go. But in looking at the overall execution of different projects, some are, because of the design, because of the progress made on design, some of the projects further up the list are ready to hit the ground rolling. And consequently, we feel that those need to be recognized and wind up further up on the list. That's not to take away from this project at all. But indeed, the funding, if the legislature chose to follow our priorities, this project certainly does fall further down the list. I mean, there's no question about that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't want to belabor the point, but I could have understand, Mr. Johnson, if it would have maybe had been at the bottom of the completed or phased projects, but it has been a phase project that also received design as some of the other projects that are in number 2 through 9. So to maybe put it at the bottom of that list of projects that have already received the dollars would have been one thing, but then to bump it down where it was, I was disappointed.
Mr. Johnson.
Priority number 20 is at Minnesota State College Southeast Technical at Winona. It would remodel 31,000 square feet of student services, nursing and learning resource center at the Winona campus. Here, too, the design was funded in 2003. It would reallocate underutilized space from the cafeteria for academic-related spaces. The campus has experienced a significant increase in enrollment in the allied health programs responding to regional needs. The college LPN program is the largest at the college and has provided 100% placement for graduates in the last 5 years. Recent additions have included a 2-year RN program, massage therapy programs as well. Priority number 21 through 32 are new projects this year appearing for the first time. St. Paul College, we would remodel 94,000 square feet of space that is designated for construction trades and applied laboratories for the construction trades. We would correct ground floor entry and egress situations, providing space for construction trades, recognizing an increase of over 300 full year equivalent students since 1997. Also, it reduces or removes deferred maintenance and would improve safety of these applied labs in the learning environment. St. Paul is another school with a variety of collaboration efforts underway. In this case, due to its strong relationship to trade groups, equipment donations, scholarships, internships have been a strong part of the history of St. Paul College over the year. As a recent example, the Pipefitters Union and General Mechanical Contractors have recently donated $500,000 for remodeling and outfitting of trades labs to be used by students in the labor force. The next project is at Minnesota State University Mankato, where we are requesting design to begin the eventual construction and renovation of Trafton Hall. The design is for 70,000 square foot addition for new science laboratories and to remodel 80,000 square feet of existing space in sciences and engineering. Trafton Hall is unique in that it produces 30% of the total credit hours that are generated on the Mankato campus. Construction is anticipated in 2006 for $30 million and remodeling in 2008 for $21 million. Some examples of collaboration at Mankato State include faculty efforts in applied student research through five privately funded research centers for things like water resources, automotive research in alternative fuels, rapid prototyping and manufacturing, advanced telecommunications, and space imaging.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chancellor Johnson, in a number of spots I've seen this deferred maintenance dollars. Are those at the total? That's not a present value number when we see that. Is that the total number that you allocated? If you don't do these improvements, that's what it's going to cost to continue to maintain that? And how long out are those dollars?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, those dollars, when you see in this presentation, when you see a deferred maintenance dollar amount, it reaches back to 1999 and 2000 when we did a survey around all our campuses to identify what work was deferred, how much work was in the deferred category. And at that time, it totaled up to be about $500 million. And so when we look at projects, we encourage colleges and universities to not only do a remodeling or a new project, but also to get rid of much of this deferred maintenance as possible within the context of a capital improvement project.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chancellor, so when, I should ask this earlier, but when you specifically say 1.5, this one doesn't have a dollar amount, but when they say 1.5 deferred in the year 2000, there was, again, refresh me, I'm not following what you're saying. So when it says 1.5 that came from the year 2000, it was deferred future spending was identified?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, that would be, one way to look at it would be in the year 2000 when that was identified, that it would represent future requirement or work that had been deferred up until that point but still needed to be done. If that 1.5, for example, was in fact a 1999 number, one could say that that's probably 2.5 million in today's dollars. Most of these deferred maintenance dollars harken back to when we did the inventory, the complete inventory in the 99 and 2000.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, when I see a project for Trafton, it reminds me of a little history we had with that building. And one of the problems that we encountered years ago was that the soil was not particularly good under that building. It was literally floating on mud, I guess, is the way it was described by one of the previous chancellors. And that created some construction problems. So my question is it wise, or is this a particular area with that construction where you're adding to the building where we won't encounter those kinds of headaches like we've had in the past?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, we would, of course, the project has not gone into design yet, so we don't know, I don't know the answer to that question, but with that history and with certainly the staff at Mankato who knows that history, those are things that certainly would be explored in that as design got underway.
So then, Mr. Chairman, what happens if we provide funding for design and it turns out that history is about to repeat itself and we're going to again encounter soil problems? And do you relocate the facility or get a cost estimate on what it would take to, I suppose, put pilings in or something to make it a stable building?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, we would have to evaluate the project and make that determination. It is always possible that you could find soils condition that would preclude doing the work for the anticipated amount, and then certainly would have to come back and tell you that. On the other hand, if conditions were found that so increased the cost, one would have to start looking at the cost of building new versus replacement. So, you know, I don't have a complete answer for that at this point, other than to say the science labs in Trafton are woefully outdated, and expansion is needed for their growing science and engineering programs. And so from a pre-design conceptual basis, we feel that this is the choice to make at this point, but not to be precluded if during the design process something turns up that might change our mind.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not arguing the point of need at all. I just happen to have been on the committee long enough to remember when we would deal with Trafton in the past, and there were soil problems, so I assume you probably will begin then with soil samples before you get too far down the road, and then make a determination as to whether that's a good place to put an addition on or not. And if not, you'll have to, I assume, explore another location. I think those of us that run the committee in those days felt that Trafton ended up being such a headache, whether we were talking roofs or just the stability of the building, that it was an unfortunate choice of location. But at that point, I think it was the largest building in the state university system. I'm turning it back to pre-merger. And so we didn't have much choice but to continue to try to correct all the problems that we were encountering. And I get a little cautious when we start talking about an addition in that location, just considering what it cost us in the past. Not that you shouldn't do something on the campus, but maybe not necessarily there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, we are very much aware of the history of Trafton, although through the turnover of staff, there are many who don't have that recollection, but I know that there are many down at Mankato who certainly understand the situation, and we would approach this one pretty carefully in its initial stages to see what we would find.
Mr. Chairman, that's all I'm
Representative
asking
Carlson.
At this point. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson.
St. Cloud State University, priority number 23 for remodeling of Brown Hall and the Math and Science Building, about 75,000 square feet of remodeling. Construction, this would be a design request for $900,000 in 04 with a construction funding of 13. 1958 and 1970 era space impacts greatly on the quality of the health science programs that are undertaken, needed to meet a critical community need for healthcare professionals, and of course the statewide need for nursing instructors at the two-year campuses. St. Cloud State currently has approximately 200 students in pre-nursing, and we believe that an additional students could be added to the program if the facilities were updated. At Rochester Community and Technical College, we're requesting $11.7 million for the renovation of Rockenbach Gymnasium and remodeling in some spaces in the Heinz Center, the former technical college. The project will take this obsolete gym space and convert it to a modern health science spaces. And by way of collaboration, we expect to see legislation this session originated by the city of Rochester to allow a change in their local sales tax language requirements. That in turn would allow use of local funds to be applied on this type of co-developed academic project. Rochester City Council has already approved $1.5 million of local sales tax receipts for this project once the change is made, or contingent upon the change in statutory language. And that would go in support of the community health and dental clinic. Previous collaboration with the City of Rochester at the Rochester Community and Technical College, you may recall that the City of Rochester contributed over $10 million from local sales taxes to a $15.5 million regional sports center located on the
college campus.
Mr. Johnson, on that project, we had a hearing on that, but I'm trying to recall with the dental and health clinic that will be housed there now, is there a problem system-wide where, I mean, I heard one of the reasons for having this was because it was difficult for the students to get the clinical time in their neighboring facilities. Is this something that's happening across the state? It just seemed odd to me that down where we have such a strong hospital that we would have a shortage of availability of clinicals for some of those students. Or, I don't know if you're familiar with it, or maybe we can get an answer to that question for a later meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I know we have problems in clinical spaces throughout the state. In this particular case, we might want to defer that particular answer either to later today if we have time. I know there are folks here from Rochester who could answer that question for you.
We can come back to it when he's all done. Thank you.
Number 25 is Minneapolis Community and Technical College. The remodeling of 8,300 square feet of basic science labs and remodeling also of almost 29,000 square feet to create Joint Health Sciences Center for Minneapolis Community and Technical College and Metropolitan State University on the campus site. Three partnership hospitals report 450 current vacancies for associate degree RN positions. These particular healthcare employers have pledged $750,000 in operating budget support for the allied health programs at the college. The significant thing here about this particular project is that the Community and Technical College is jointly working with Metropolitan State University's nursing programs to create a comprehensive healthcare curriculum where it would offer 2+2+2 career laddering on the Minneapolis campus. And this allows students to move from short-term training for certified nursing assistants to licensed practical nurses to associate, bachelor's, and even master's degree in a seamless way for the students. Century College is number 26. This is a design request for $1 million this year, anticipating construction funding of $18 million in 2006 and $5.4 million in remodeling in 2008. As I noted earlier, this campus has one of the largest growth records in recent history, over 54% since 1999. And with that comes one of the largest space deficits. Collaborations here at Century include Allied Health Workforce Development with the college's new Health Careers Institution, which is a partnership between several Twin Cities hospitals and the college. From the fall of 99 to fall 2002, registration in science courses is up over 30%, and student sciences is now capped due to the state of the existing facilities. The college produces many of the state's paramedics, nurses, and other allied health professionals. This college also is unique in its partnership with Intermediate School District 916, where it provides learning resources and education space for over 1,500 high school students. This particular partnership reduces duplication of library and other resources for the school district. Riverland Community College, where we were last week, number 27, we briefed that project last week. Let me just say that it's also a remodeling for 18,000 square feet for science labs at the Austin campus and remodeling of 4,000 square feet science labs at the Albert Lee campus. Priority number 28, Anoka Ramsey Community College.
One quick question on that. I forgot to ask this last week. What is the breakdown on the Riverland between Albert Lee and Austin, the cost? Do you have those numbers?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have those handy. I'll get you that breakdown.
You don't have, if you don't have it today, that's fine. You can get to me later.
Number 28 is Anoka Ramsey Community College. This is at the Cambridge campus, and it is an academic building addition to the main campus. It was constructed just about 8 to 10 years ago, and the demolition of existing metal buildings that are across County Highway 70 in turn. And so it does consolidate all the academic space at the new building location. The in terms of partnerships at the Anoka Ramsey Cambridge site, there's a partnership that is being explored right now between the school district 911, the city of Cambridge, and Asante County, where the decommissioning of these old buildings and demolition of those buildings and vacating the site west of County Road 70 could allow for a number of things to improve the area. The possibility of realignment of County Road 70, a co-location with a middle school perhaps, and opportunities for privately supported student housing.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Johnson, do we own those buildings that you would demolish?
And
how did we acquire them? Were they given to us as a gift then? Because if I recall, when we opened the center, there was a cooperative approach to providing facilities between the old community college system and the city of Cambridge. And their economic development agency was quite involved with the construction. And they must have then at some point signed them over to us, because I guess the basic question, they are state buildings then that we're paying to demolish?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, they are state buildings. I don't know the history of that, and we can get you that information.
The history, Mr. Chairman, isn't important. The thing that's important is whether we're the owners, and then if they have to be demolished, so be it. That's all I'm asking. So they are state buildings.
Mr. Chair, Johnson. Representative Carlson, yes, it's my understanding, and I'll double-check that and make sure that I'm right.
Thank you.
The next project is at Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College. It is a request for design funds in the amount of $635,000 to design a 12,000-foot library addition and construct a 9.8 million. Oh, that would be getting twisted up here. 12,000-foot square foot library addition to act as a learning resource center, as well as design a 22,000 square foot multi-purpose space as the Jack Briggs Cultural Center. The construction request for these two activities would be anticipated in 2006 at $9.8 million. The library space will archive Ojibwe collections and Native American materials that are unique to Minnesota. Inclusion of the multi-purpose space would allow expansion in the academic programs, specifically those that are aimed at training tribal and other law enforcement officers. Recall that Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College is one of the few tribal colleges in the country, and it's the only Minnesota State College and University land-grant institution, and it has very many unique collaborative partnerships. For this particular project, the college anticipates receiving $100,000 for equipment, computers, and related technical equipment from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Development Program. And also, the college is pursuing an American Indian College Fund construction grant in the amount of $1 million, similar for earlier construction programs. You'll hear more about these possibilities for the construction phase of the project when we return in 2006 for construction funding. Another collaborative effort here I'd like to note is that the Tribal Council of the Fond du Lac Band recently donated a temporary building to the college valued at over $150,000. That temporary building will be the temporary home of the teacher education program, expanding to a four-year program for teacher ed. Project number 30, back to Minnesota State University Moorhead. This is a request for design funds in the amount of $500,000 for the renovation of McLean Hall. It would anticipate a construction request of $8.5 million in 2006, providing space for kindergarten to 12th grade teacher training and space for department and faculty offices for up to seven departments. This is a very basic remodeling project for an old state university building. It will enhance community connections through such uses as providing space for the Center for Economic Education, conference seminar rooms for faculty, students, and the public for lectures, presentations, and meeting spaces. Central Lakes College, Brainerd, and Staples campuses, the request for $5.4 million. It would construct a 29,000-square-foot heavy equipment shop at Staples and then remodel 7,000 square feet of vacated shop space at Staples. It would also construct and remodel 5,200 square feet for music programs at Brainerd. The heavy equipment program at Staples has many industry firms that sponsor scholarships and donate equipment. The program also directly collaborates with several community and business and industry groups. A couple of examples here, students have worked with Habitat for Humanity doing site preparation and landscaping. They've worked with the city and the school district on site work for the new high school, construction of ball fields in the city park. The heavy equipment program provides space to MnDOT to deliver training seminars. The school has also partnered with the International Union of Operating Engineers where they were able to replace an instructor who was on sabbatical leave for a semester. The music program back at the Brainerd campus, that remodeling project would support further collaboration with several community groups where students from five local high schools are able to participate in various performing groups. The music program also provides advanced music education for adults in the Brainerd area, especially in applied music, such as piano. Northland Community and Technical College, priority number 32. This is a workforce addition and renovation for nursing. It would relocate the workforce center that's currently on board the college campus in a 4,800 square foot addition and remodel about 600 square feet as well. There would also be a remodeling of 3,200 square feet to expand nursing and allied health programs and some remodeling to support agricultural management center. The workforce center at Northland Community and Technical College has been an integral part of the college since they relocated there in 1995. At that time, the college was able to accommodate them by remodeling existing space. This proposal now would move the Workforce Center to a more accessible and visible area of the building to make access for displaced workers and others needing the Workforce Center to improve access to the Workforce Center and allowing a centralized space for instruction purposes. Mr. Chairman, that completes the overview of our project requests, and subject to your questions, that concludes my part of the presentation. Our presidents are available to answer any other questions if we'd like to go back on any of those that we deferred.
Thank you for that overview. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Johnson, I'd like to go back to the HEPR for a moment, and at the recommended funding level, considering if I recall correctly, you said that the campuses had requested 200 and you had moved them back to 100, and the governor now has them at, I think it was 49. And my question is, what are the risks? Because I noticed there's, you know, a lot of roofs, and you indicated that at least that how you would tentatively allocate that money, we would still have some roofs that were not repaired that were actually leaking. Boilers are an integral part of most campuses. A good Minnesota winter like today. I remember when we were dealing with boilers in Winona, we kind of held our breath for a couple of years that those boilers wouldn't, or that boiler, I think it was replacing one, if I recall, wouldn't go out in the dead of winter. So, essentially, what are some of the risk factors here at the funding level of $49 million so that we can safely make it to the next round of bonding if that were the number that would ultimately prevail? Or what's needed to reduce the risk factors so we're sure to at least keep the buildings dry and warm, I think is the way you put it, without undue costs into the future for other kinds of repairs.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the risk, I would say, is one of deferring things into the future. And the risk varies depending on the campus and the condition of the existing systems and roofs. In the case of roofs, where a roof is already leaking, there's the additional maintenance costs of cleaning up after a leak and protecting equipment and protecting books and so on. There's also the prolonged risk of introducing moisture into a building, and moisture then invariably leads to mold and other conditions. So while you might say, well, I'll defer the roof and I'll live with the leaking a little bit longer, it invariably only worsens and increases the cost eventually of making the replacement. I can also use an example of a roof we just found a few weeks ago, and this was a case where we did not know the detail in this particular roof, but through a routine roof inspection, we found not only was the insulation wet, but in fact the roof deck beneath that insulation had deteriorated to the point where it required immediate replacement. Well, when you require immediate replacement, invariably the operating budget of the institution cannot handle it, and we have to return to the HEPA program, which means I have to then go back and look at some school who may not have been as aggressive on executing a HEPA project and move money from one school to another. So there's always these hidden risks that we don't know until they actually come upon us. In the case of boilers and mechanical equipment and things like that, most of these systems continue to operate, continue to be held together and operated quite well by the operating forces at the schools. Here too, I've had surprises where a boiler may fail, and we have to go and find some HEPA money to reallocate. So there's always those risks when we defer these types of things. They only add to the growing list of deferred maintenance. It's not a diminishing list. It's a growing list.
And Mr. Chairman, I assume that even though there was a $200 million request, that when the system went with the $100 million, they felt comfortable if they got $100 million that they would be able to make it to the next biennium without any undue damage to the buildings in the system. How comfortable are you at that 49? When I asked about the risks, is the 100 absolutely essential? I assume anything above the 49 on a continuum improves it. I guess that's part of what I'm asking about. What are the risks? I'm buying into the fact you said you needed 100, and I'm operating under the assumption that that's what was necessary to protect our assets.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, part of the rationale in the 100 is looking out 10, 12, 15 years in the future and trying to do a combination of maintaining our facilities as they ought to be, as well as nibbling away constantly at the backlog. And so 100 is not a magic number. It could have been 95. It could have been 103. But it represents a plan that would take us out a number of years to reduce the backlog. At 100 million, we're comfortable that we don't have any crises looming within the next 5 million or the next 6 million. We analyze those conditions pretty closely in terms of the high risk issues, the roofs, and the infrastructure pieces, to know what needs to be on that list in order to give us that comfort factor. We have three cases this year that we became aware of. One is one of our schools is going off district steam because the district steam folks are shutting down their supply. And so immediately we have an effort that has to get heat to those buildings. At the same time, we have deteriorated pipes at another sister institution that need to be replaced. That's probably a high-risk one right there. We know the pipes have failed in the past. We know they leak. We know they'll probably fail in the future. And so they're on the list, even at the $49 million list, at the $49 million range. That means that somebody else's project that might not be as high a risk at the moment has fallen off that list.
I'll stop there. Thank you.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, on the list that we've just gone through, there were a lot of projects, it seemed, that had design money granted by the legislature. So there are projects that are ready to go but have not made at least the governor's cutoff. And those of us that have those projects will work hard to rearrange the priorities a little bit. But my question is, in the past, since I'm serving my first 2 years on this committee, in the past, has it been typical that we have funded the design and then not in an orderly fashion also funded the construction project?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the funding requests that we make have varied depending on the project and how well it has been developed and how quickly we think we can spend the bonding dollars. That would drive us in many, many cases to say we should design in one biennium, get the design done if we're starting from scratch, and then come for construction funds in the next biennium. And so you see a number of those in our requests. Some projects are so far along in the process right now in that an architect may have been selected. Work is already underway. The schools have really identified precisely what they want, that we feel comfortable in requesting the entire amount, knowing that we can complete design work and get the construction underway in this biennium. And so I think that you'll find that historically there's a variety of ways the projects are funded, both for design, sometimes design and construction. Sometimes over three biennia, you might see design in the first, new construction in the second, and remodeling in the third. Represents an orderly flow both from a technical perspective as well as a financial perspective in using bonding fund capacity and bonding funds.
Somewhat along that line, with the list of projects you have, I know the last part are new projects. Are there any projects from your request 2 years ago where there was dollars requested that it was not funded 2 years ago and they are no longer on this list either, that they've kind of just gone away?
Mr. Chairman, I believe from 02 and 03, nothing has gone away that comes to mind. Okay. I believe they've all been either funded, well, they've been funded.
So they've moved on.
Okay. I believe so.
So there's nothing that's dropped off the list or the ranking or fallen below this ranking list. And maybe you can check into that.
Mr. Chairman, I'll check into that. I don't recall any that were canceled.
Okay. It just seemed that there's so many new projects here, and I know we didn't completely, we didn't do the entire the list that you had requested last time, so I was just curious if those projects are still within that. But Representative Meswell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question actually has been answered.
Okay. Representative Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Johnson, I'm trying to determine what sort of the economic opportunity cost is of not funding some of your requests this time around. Have you given any thought, or maybe you could if you haven't, to the question of the $51 million in HEPR money that is unfunded in the governor's allocation? If you were to come back in 2 years, how much would you have to ask for to fund those HEPR projects in 2 years? And then the second question would be the counterpart for the other projects on the list. If you were to come back in 2 years and ask for funding for the other projects, the non-HEPR projects on this list that are not funded in the governor's allocation, how much would you have to ask for in 2 years to complete those projects?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Latz, we haven't done that kind of analysis. That's a good challenge for us to take up and reply to the committee. Clearly, we know costs escalate. That's a given. And just to hearken back to what I said about the backlog, for example, when we identified a backlog in 1999 and 2000, we identified it as about $500 million in $99. If you escalate that today and you subtract from that money that has been applied to the backlog and you add to it new items that have not been done over that period of time, we have a backlog that is
upwards of $600 million right now. So, you know, the opportunity cost here, if we leave it unfunded, that backlog continues to grow. And, of course, the cost of the individual project escalates not only on a value type basis, but it also escalates because invariably things wear out and cause the prices to go up, the cost to go up.
Representative Latz.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Johnson, perhaps a good way to look at it, or another good way to look at it, would be to take those projects that went unfunded in the last biennium that are returning now with the request. And I wasn't here 2 years ago during that capital bonding process. Maybe there aren't any projects, but that went unfunded. But if there were any, and they're back here now, maybe you could tell us what the increase, if any, in the cost of the project is before us today compared to 2 years ago. That would give us some benchmark. And then if we try to project out to the future as well, we could factor in the cost of borrowing now, which is relatively low historically, compared to what it anticipated could be 2 years down the road. And we could actually try to come up with some economic cost to delaying funding it a couple of years. I'd be interested if you could set your finance people to work and give us some, as much as an economist can project. I'm going to figure those kind of costs out would be helpful to me.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Latz, I would love to get my finance people to go to work here. Knowing that my boss is the chief financial officer.
Representative Nelson.
I have a question, kind of a generic question or kind of a broad question. Many of the projects have to do with trying to meet the growing need that we have for allied health services and nursing students. And my question is twofold. One, you kind of mentioned the fact that one of the issues in addition to space and programs is having qualified instructors. And, of course, another issue is, as Chairman Stang mentioned, is having the spot for clinicals. So as we're looking at these different allied health funding projects, I would like to know, if it's possible, in addition to the request for the space and the programming, what steps are in place to make sure, I don't know how you can guarantee that you'll be able to find qualified instructors, but what about the clinical space? I think we need to know if there's going to be adequate clinicals provided to go along with the projects. Is that something you can come up with?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, that's something that I believe we owe you from the question last week and amplified by your question this week. In that our first blush at this felt we felt that we could see an increase in student capability, but could not at this point address the instructors or the clinicals. Now I'm going to turn my head and see Senior Vice Chancellor Linda Baer, who will be able to address part of your question.
Welcome, Vice Chancellor Baer.
Thank you, Chair Stang. Representative Nelson, it's an outstanding question. I think if you remember from last year, we did bring forward a request for $6 million that would have produced over 440 nursing students that would move through our process in addition to what we were doing already. We have a pipeline of nurses coming through. We have been increasing the capacity of meeting those nursing needs, but we can only do it in a trickle, given what we have right now. So one, it has to do with what facilities do we have, increasing the science and laboratory facilities. Two, we have to increase the faculty, because as we have a shortage of nurses in the industry, we also have a shortage or the same kind of thing affecting our faculty who teach the nurses. And so that project had a proposal for increasing masters of nursing student graduates who could go into our classrooms. The clinicals go hand in hand, and you're right, because within the organization for accreditation, clinicals must accompany. Clinicals are strictly defined by number. And so with some of these facilities, you are seeing some schools grow a kind of, like, for example, at Minnesota State University Moorhead, grow a student health center to the place where it is an accredited health center, and now it will serve as a place for clinicals. So sometimes we're doing that for clinicals. Also, we're talking to the healthcare organizations, the hospitals, the clinics, because they know this is their problem as much as our problem. And so they are also addressing this and working with us to grow more clinical sites. Sometimes that may be for the fact of working 24 hours and doing night clinicals when they may not be doing laboratory work at the hospital as they might have during the daytime. So we're trying to be very creative about this, but we know all three of those things go hand in hand: numbers of nursing students, the numbers of nursing faculty, and the clinicals that help our students continue to move through the pipeline.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. And so what I, as we looked in at funding these different proposals, is there a way that we can pull in that information so that we know of the projects that we would fund, what is the chance that you're going to have the necessary clinicals available already without growing them in the community? And then also, what are the options for getting qualified, certified staff in those areas?
Vice Chancellor Baer.
Chair Stang and Representative Nelson, we can get you exactly that parallel. Every time we've talked about an expansion of science or facilities with a result of more nursing capacity, we'll get you the compendium that also talks about what we're doing about clinicals.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chancellor Johnson, I have two questions. One, a follow-up to Representative Latz. Is there any projects that the previous governor vetoed in 02 that are still on the list, either under the governor's rex or not under the governor's rex?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, all the vetoes were reversed in 03, so there are no projects left
and
over.
Representative One McNamara. More follow-up, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, has it Minsky ever used any design build? I noticed you got $63 million worth of projects here to design that the governor's not recommending to be funded. So we're spending a lot of money on design. And has Minsky ever used design build in this project?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, we do not have a design build authority, and so we have not used it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Vice Chancellor. Seeing no other questions, thank you, Mr. Johnson. I appreciate the testimony. Members, last week I had indicated that there was going to be a meeting next Tuesday at the University of Minnesota, but because there was an education committee going over the standards, there was a lot of crossover from our members, so we are rescheduling that, so we won't be meeting until actually session begins. And we probably will take an afternoon once session does begin to go out to the university and tour their projects and let them give us an overview. So with that, got the minutes before us. Representative Meslow, would you move adoption of the minutes?
I so move, Mr. Chair.
Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, the minutes are adopted. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.